Jacqueline, you've adopted and expanded plot lines and characters from a Shakespeare's play, The Tempest, in your new book, Miranda and Caliban. Tell us how and why you developed this story, why you chose to take a classic like Shakespeare.
Well, my youthful memories of The Tempest were that it was this sort of frothy little fantasy in which the bad people got their comeuppance and justice and love triumphed. And I reread it a few years ago, and there are a lot of really dark themes underlying it.
Mm-hmm.
Our noble magician Prospero is actually incredibly controlling, and both Ariel and Caliban are kept in a state of virtual servitude. And I thought, wow, that is not at all like I remembered it. And the action of Shakespeare's play all takes place in the course of a single day.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, what went on in the 12 years leading up to that day? So that's what I set out to explore.
Why 12 years? Was it a certain age that you wanted to start from for some of these characters?
Actually, I misspoke slightly. In accordance with the timeline of the play, they would have been on the island 12 years.
Okay.
I started with Miranda at the age of 6, so it's not the full 12 that I'm exploring.
And you're right. They're very dark characters. There are times that, and it's a beautiful book. I love the way you write.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, when I read about these characters, it's almost uncomfortable at point. It's like that father figure, Papa, is so mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain that they go through when he plays this magic on them. But it's a beautiful love story, but it's got tragedy in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you often write trilogies and series. When I looked at your background, is this the first book that I assume this is going to be a standalone?
Yes, correct. It's technically not my first standalone. There is a duology, which is collectively known as The Sundering, and that was also a deconstruction in which I reinvented epic fantasy as epic tragedy from a point of view sympathetic to the losing side,
mm-hmm.
but it got so big it was divided into two volumes. But I still think of it as a standalone work.
I imagine a writer who does series, for the most part, you live a long time with these characters. Is it hard
mm-hmm.
for you to let go?
Not if I feel the ending is just as it should be. If the narrative has come to a perfect and satisfying conclusion, then I think it's easier for me to walk away than for my readers sometimes.
Yeah, I could agree with that. The ending on this one is like, wait, wait,
mm-hmm.
I wanted more. Maybe give a synopsis for our listeners, since this is a new book just out, to just tantalize a little bit.
It is my retelling of Shakespeare's Tempest, exploring the years leading up to the action of that play, but through the eyes of two of the secondary characters, the titular Miranda and Caliban. I envisioned them as, there's nothing in the reading of The Tempest that tells us Caliban was an adult when they arrived on the island. And I thought, well, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was this lonely, abandoned child. So it starts out as a story of friendship between two very lonely, isolated young people and takes on a different aspect as they reach adolescence.
Let's talk about your journey as a writer. Now, I understand that it began not necessarily in childhood, but more around college years when you worked at a bookstore in London. Tell us about how that began for you.
It actually began as a secret hobby when I was in high school and transferred schools. And due to some overlap in the curriculum, I was terribly bored. So I started a novel in the back of my notebook.
Ah.
So it always looked like I was taking notes in class. And it was this little, like I said, a secret hobby that I kept up all through college. I did not study creative writing. I studied English literature, but the analysis thereof. And it was actually after I graduated from college that I took part in a work exchange program and spent 6 months in London working in a bookstore. And that was when I kind of looked around and said, people do this for a living, this thing I love, and realized it was a vocation.
Did anything ever come of those notes in the back of these notebooks that you secretly wrote?
Oh, God, no, they were horrible.
Well, first work usually is. But did any of the ideas maybe survive? No? Characters, perhaps?
I really haven't drawn on those, but every now and then there's a turn of phrase that I'll sort of remember fondly.
Mm.
But, you know, it's often axiomatic in the writing community that one of the secrets to writing a really polished debut novel is to write at least one practice novel first.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a few.
Mm. And what about choosing the fantasy genre? What about that intrigued you?
Well, I'm an eclectic reader, but I've always read and loved fantasy since my mother gave me the Chronicles of Narnia as a child. But it's also a genre in which things are much better now, but when I began getting into it, and it's still an issue, women were terribly underrepresented.
Yeah.
And you didn't find a lot of work with sort of an adult emotional sensibility. And that's something that a couple of things that I craved in my fantasy. So I kind of set out to fill the void.
I've often heard writers say that, write the book that you want to read.
And absolutely.
Yeah. And in fact, when I look at your books, the covers, they tend to always have a strong female character on the cover. So is there a certain female character that you usually stick with, or are they all different?
No, I'd say they're all pretty wildly different. And the second Kushiel trilogy has a male protagonist. And I fought and lost the battle with my editor to get him on one of his own cover, or on the cover of one of his own stories. But their feeling was that women don't buy books with men on the cover. So I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. So women usually buy books with other women on the cover. We want to read about our own. Is that the thinking?
I guess.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Fabio and the whole romance industry would belie that, but...
Now, would you include yourself in the romance industry, or is it fantasy romance, historical fantasy romance?
I wouldn't categorize my work as genre romance, but most of it does have a romantic element to it. But that's not the essential framework of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to avoid using the word formulaic. I'll just say it. Genre romance does tend to follow. There are a set number of formulas.
You're also a well-traveled person and into art and history. How do those work their way, because I've got to think that they do, into your work? Or how do they inspire you?
Oh, absolutely. The Kushiel's Legacy, which is the sort of historical fantasy series I'm known best for, covers a lot of territory. And when I've been able to travel to places I've written about, it really informs the work at a visceral level where you know what a place, what the air feels like, what it smells like, what the ground feels like under your feet. And I draw on an awful lot of history as well. And art is wonderfully inspirational on a visual level. And I tend to be a pretty visual storyteller. So all of those things definitely feed into my writing.
Is that where your ideas usually are born, perhaps on a journey somewhere or perhaps in a museum?
All of the above, really. It's kind of an organic process. There, I can point to certain things. Like the setting of Miranda and Caliban was most definitely inspired by a trip to the Alhambra, as well as the Alcazar in Sevilla when I was in Spain a couple of years ago. Travels to the south of France inspired the base setting of the Kushiel's Legacy series. So sometimes I can. Other times somebody will point something out and say, oh, that scene is very Caravaggisti. And I'm like, oh, it is.
Are you a Shakespeare fan in general? Was it intimidating to you at all to work with someone so well-known and classic and taking some of those elements from his play for your work?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, that's that's taking on one of the literary giants.
Yeah.
But I guess having already done so in a sense with Tolkien, I maybe
That's
wasn't
true.
As scared
yeah.
as I should have been.
Do you see it as a play ever, that your book would be transformed in a play?
You know, I kind of wondered about that when I was writing it, because I thought about, what Gregory Maguire did with Wicked and wondering if he could ever have imagined that would end up being a musical. I haven't gotten the answer for that, but I think it's an interesting question to ponder.
A stage play or a screenplay, probably two very different formats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very different media.
Now, you've also written, correct me if I'm wrong, one nonfiction book, Angels, Celestial Spirits, and Art and Legend. Is that correct?
That is correct. Although I will also say it was a work for hire rather than a passion project. In the 90s, when there was such a angel craze, my mother would say to me periodically, "Honey, you should write a book about angels." And I'm like, nah. And then a friend of mine who worked for this publisher that does these beautiful coffee table books called me and said, "You know, we're going into a meeting and I just thought of you. Have you got any ideas to pitch?" And I was an unpublished writer at that time. And I'm like, angels? And they ended up going for it, which was great because a lot of the research I did into narratives for various figures from Judeo-Christian lore ended up being the research that informed the mythology of the Kushiel's legacy books. So that was cool.
Now, something aside from your writing life, looking online, I found out that you're a member of the oldest Mardi Gras crew in Michigan. Talk about that.
Oh, sadly, the crew is kind of on a permanent hiatus.
Aw.
But we had a good run of a dozen or so years, and it started as a handful of women saying, "Why don't we celebrate Mardi Gras in town?" And the next year, they called all the creative, industrious friends they could think of, and we created a Mardi Gras festival. And the first year, there was one float, ours.
Where was this located?
Downtown Douglas.
Okay.
And people looked very surprised when we threw beads at them. But it grew and grew, and at its height was actually pretty spectacular. But unfortunately, it was so much work to do that our crew sadly disbanded some years ago.
Now, when I read oldest, how old was it? How long did it last?
I cannot remember that off the top of my head. I want to say mid-90s through 2005 or so.
Okay.
And there is still a Mardi Gras celebration in Douglas, but it is not of the scope and caliber it was when the Mystic Crew of the Kalamazoo was running things.
Any new projects underway yet, or do you take a break between?
No, I actually have been working on a manuscript all along, which will be going into the editing phase pretty soon. And this is, it's actually a return to more epic fantasy with sort of a dash of pulp horror in this case.
I do hope this gets either a stage or a screenplay or something. Your writing is very visual. I would love to see this as some kind of visual form.
Well, thank you. I hope so, too. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Tell your publicist I said so.
I will.
All right, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.